Welcome to Talking with the Experts. This is where we discuss great ideas to take your business to the next level. How do we know these ideas work? Well, it's because we're talking with business owners who are using these ideas. Business owners who have years of experience and expertise. All things business, by business owners, for business owners. And now, here is your host, Rose Davidson.
Hello, welcome to Talking with the Experts. I'm your host, Rose Davidson, from rosedavidson.com.au. And it's my very great pleasure to introduce you to Gabriel Kamm. And he is coming to speak with us about e-commerce and all things e-commerce to do with SEO, social media, and e-commerce growth. Now, Gabriel is a French entrepreneur living in Paris. He's the CEO and co-founder of the KNR Agency. And since 2016, he's been working with the biggest fashion, beauty, and luxury brands to help their growth on e-commerce. And some of his notable clients are LVMH, L'Oreal, and Givenchy. And I didn't say that correctly, but it's as close as I can get. Gabrielle, it's such a pleasure to meet you all the way from Paris. Welcome to Talking with the Experts.
Thank you for having me, Rose.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit, how did you end up owning your own business and doing e-commerce for fashion industry?
Well, you know, it kind of happened organically. I was always a big fan of digital. Like, I was kind of like a geek when I was growing up. Really always on my computer. And when I moved to Paris, my first job was by chance to work in a fashion for a fashion brand, for a fashion company. So I got just in love with the process, you know, with the universe. So I started to freelancing with it. I got coupled with a friend of mine who's now my business partner, Antoine Roffler. He's doing mostly like the design for us at the beginning. And that's how we ended up, starting a company in Paris, working in fashion, which is not a bad city, I guess, you know, to start this kind of business.
No, well, Paris is one of the fashion capitals of the world, so you're in a good place to be, and what an exciting industry that it is to work in. So, okay, how do you balance automation with a personalized customer experience?
Yeah, well, we do a lot of automation internally, of course, for us. You know, it's helped us aggregate data, calculate data, and get a bit of overview about what's going on without having to, you know, like do the work, you know, manually. So it's more about grabbing information, consolidating information, presenting information so you can make, like a good decision. But then when it comes to the, you know, human interaction, it's always better when it's a human touch, or if it really, really looks like a human touch, which is really funny to do now with AI. So yeah, it's kind of like the, you know, I don't know, both sides of same coins, you know, I would say, like they both take place.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I mean, the customer experience is always what we should have front of mind all the time. It doesn't matter what industry we're in. So how can a small e-commerce brand compete with these industry giants? Because there must be, a big step to get from, you know, starting out to competing against, you know, the likes of L'Oreal.
Yeah, well, I always say actually that it's easier to be small. You know, I mean, of course, if it's good to be like a L'Oreal type of size of client. But even for us as an agency, you know, when we started out, they were just like Antoine and I, and we were competing, you know, against the Publicis, the Fred and Fairy of this world. And for a long time, I felt like I was too small, and I didn't feel like I had my place. And it took me like a few years to realize that my strength was in my size. Like, people actually liked to work with smaller agency because, you know, there's less politics involved. Decision can make quicker. They actually always talk to the right team. They don't get like a VP of sales that then turn them into like an intern that doesn't know how to do their job. So that's the same thing for brand, right? Like, some people, they really want to connect with the brand on a personal level, maybe even with the founder or the co-founder of the story of the brand, which is a little bit less easy to do with like big brand like L'Oreal, right? Because I mean, they have to be global, so it's really hard for them to be in a specific niche. So I always say when I talk to small brands that I'm coaching, you know, like when it comes to the fashion, beauty, and luxury industry, like embrace your small size, make it your strength, because you're gonna attract the people who are actually looking for brands of your size. So yeah, it's kind of like flipping the thing around, like trying to see the problem in another way in your mind, and then it becomes a strength instead of a drawback.
Yeah, and I guess that's true for all industries. I mean, if we work to our strengths and find our niche audience and keep targeting them, we will become better known and we can grow our brands in that way. Yeah, so what are some of the biggest mistakes, Gabrielle, that entrepreneurs are making when they're launching their online stores?
I think one of the main mistakes that I see people do when they launch an e-commerce website is they try to do everything on their own. Like they don't try to delegate, they try to do everything on their own, and it's such like a such a sure path to failure. But even when they try to delegate, they try to delegate to do everything. And trust me, I'm a culprit of that too. I've been trying, you know, I have way too much idea. I'm trying to do everything at the same time. But for example, if you wanted to like a specific, subject, I always say brands when they're really starting out, when they really want to get known, it doesn't make sense for them to be present on all social media platforms, you know, because you have the Facebook here, the Instagram here, the Snapchat, the TikTok, and whatever. And they're trying to do everything. I think they should really focus on maybe one or two platforms. They should really try to be good at it, get an audience over there. And once they have the status, once they have the thing going on, it will be very then easy for them to kind of like dilute the audience and go to other platforms. But yeah, my advice would be if you're just starting out, don't try to be everywhere at the same time. Focus on one to two platforms like Instagram or maybe Pinterest. If you're doing fashion, for example, that would make sense. And focus on that before you go and try to do the YouTube reels, the podcasting, and like the YouTube and whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people that are starting out, they want to throw mud at everything and they want to be everywhere, as you said. But how can they compete with, these people that are getting, thousands of views on their content? How can they make themselves stand out?
I mean, exactly. I mean, I think if you right now, if you're like starting a brand, oh, you okay? Yeah, if you're starting like a fashion brand or like a cosmetic brand, and then if you're just starting out, you don't have an audience, and you see all of these big brands influencer racking millions of views, it can be a little bit depressing. So my advice would be to try to, well, first of all, try to understand a little bit how this platform works. There's a lot of resources online when it comes to YouTube video, blog article to explain to you exactly how this platform works. Try to get resources that are recent because this platform evolve a lot, like kind of like the game changes every 6 to 12 months. So try to understand how they work. And don't be discouraged if your first post doesn't, you know, doesn't make like millions of views. Hopefully by posting, com not consistently, but posting, you know, like multiple time and trying to improve it every time you post. At some point, you will find the success if you really try to improve the post one by one and try to understand what makes a good post and why does algorithm reward this post instead of this post with views.
Yeah, is it advisable to look at your competitors, so people in the same niche, and steal, not steal their ideas so much, but emulate what they're doing? I mean, if they're getting, a lot of views on a particular post, maybe looking at what they're doing and how they're doing it might help you to get the traction on your posts.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a really great idea. I mean, I mean, I know it's hard sometimes to hear from creators that you tell them you should like look at a competitor and try to emulate them, and because creative people have a desire to create something that's from their own. But when it comes to like a business approach, I myself like to have like a like a business view, try to look at what's already working and try to emulate that, and then put your own little spin on it. So you make sure that you're not going like into a direction that is really hard to function. But I mean, yeah, I think it's always good to look at what the competitor is doing, what they're doing right, and what resonates with you. You don't want to copy them and be just a same copy, but try to understand why they're doing right and why it's working, and try to see how you can implement that into your own vision for your own platform, for your own content.
Yeah, great points there. I think not copying but emulating what your competitors are doing is a great way to get started, and and you can sort of work out why these posts are doing better than yours. I mean, might be just wording it, that you're not reaching your target audience, you're not making them feel that they need to buy from you. So yeah, just be mindful that as you say, not copying them, because that wouldn't be the right thing. But just emulate them and see what works for them, and see why they're doing so well.
Yeah,
So what?
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I was saying exactly, especially for people like me who maybe don't have this creativeness inside of me when it comes to content creation. It's really hard, because if you want to start, you're like, okay, what do I do? Like, what kind of post do I make? Am I making? Well, if you have this, I would say like kind of like a writer's block. I think that's the term in English.
Yeah.
Try to look at your competition and maybe try to emulate one and try to see. And then it's all about getting the ball rolling. Once you start to create content, it will be much easier to create more. So yeah, look at the competition, look at what they're doing, try to emulate things that are working. So look at the amount of likes, views, comments, stuff like that, and try to see if it makes sense for you to create this type of content for your brand.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. So how do we build a long-term brand loyalty when the market is so competitive?
Well, I think if you really want to start a brand and work on the longevity and try to create an audience that's going to follow you and love you, on the long term, you really need to find your niche and you need to find your target audience, and you kind of have to stick to them. So hopefully choose one that that you like and that you love to create content about and interact with. It's not always the case, but I feel like people, when they found a new brand that they like for some reason, if the brand stays loyal to this reason, I think they're gonna keep following. And hopefully, if you have the right product to sell them, they will keep buying and buying for you because they have this kind of like emotional connection with the brand. So yeah, I mean, usually I would say for a brand, it's kind of it's really good to have values that you can communicate. It's also good to have and identify type of audience. You could be targeting people who really really love fashion with Italian vibe on it. You can really talk to people who are more like into the gothic world, and if you stick on that and if you talk to these people, hopefully they will react positively to your content, and that's how you create a brand that has like a lasting a lasting experience.
Yeah, that's right. And you've got to really know what your niche is, don't you? You can't sell to everyone. When you're starting out, you've got to find a particular demographic, I suppose, that you want to appeal to. And then, once you get better known, then you can broaden that and make it, and expand your niche. And then you can sort of cater to more people. I think that's
Yeah,
probably the best way to go.
exactly.
Yeah. So, Gabriel, we've got a lot of social media platforms to choose from. But if you're going to launch a luxury e-commerce brand, what are the best ones?
When it comes to e-commerce platform right now, I'm seeing a lot of premium slash luxury brand who tend to navigate towards a platform like Shopify. Platform like Shopify, it's like a CMS for e-commerce. especially right now, like in Europe, within the past 6 months, they've been doing like a lot of sales and marketing to be known on the market. And it's a platform we've been using for a long time. We're actually like an agency certified partner. And it's a good platform because the barrier to entry is very low. It's really easy to install, to configure, and to understand. Compared to other software that we've been using in the past for luxury brand, like a Salesforce Commerce Cloud, or this kind of like a Hybris, that are really, they are really expensive. Like the license fee are really expensive. It's harder and harder to hire people who actually know how to use the platform. So if you tend to build like a big team, you can have trouble finding talents to help you manage that. And then they're not really malleable. It's really hard to make this company involved, this website involved. We have clients that we're working with. They've been doing like a migration on Salesforce for a year now, and it's not live yet. But for when it comes to Shopify, we just released one in 2 3 months. So I feel like right now, I mean, of course, we can see the web is changing, digitally changing, e-commerce is changing. New software are coming up every month at most, especially with AI. Now we're going into like a new era. So we are seeing like a shift in the way we use software and the kind of software we want to use. I think right now software should be easy to use, have a lot of a nice ecosystem to have lots of apps and creators and developers who want to contribute to that ecosystem. And that's the case from Shopify with the app system in the marketplace. So yeah, I do believe this kind of platform are probably going to be there for the future. In the next year, we're probably going to see like a lot of brands, even big brands, starting to leave this big software like Salesforce because they're really expensive and hard to maintain, and move towards this platform that are a little bit more agile, like Shopify. Or maybe BigCommerce is also like another example, but I do believe right now Shopify has the best momentum.
Yeah, what about WooCommerce? Is WooCommerce any good for, having an e-commerce brand?
So WooCommerce, I kind of have like a love and hate relationship with this CMS. Because when I started, I think I actually did contribute some codes to the WooCommerce because I used to work on this platform a lot and I used to be like a developer. So, and it's open source, so everybody who knows how to code can code. And I think there's some of my code in the software. So I used to love it a lot, and I used to use it for my first project when I was doing freelancing. The issue that I have with WooCommerce and overall with WordPress, is that it's really easy to use. It's really hard to use, sorry, for like a non-technical person. When you really want to manage the design, so right now, for example, on WordPress, I think the main tool to build website is like Elementor or Divi or stuff like that. And I don't know. I don't like how they work. I don't like the fact that there's no separation between data and the design. That's not what a CMS is supposed to be like, right? And that's the problem with WordPress. WordPress used to be like a blogging platform. Then with this plugin WooCommerce, it becomes like an e-commerce platform, but not really. So I mean, we still have people who have WooCommerce website and they make a lot of money on it. They're able to sell. But once they're able to switch to like a platform that have been engineered and designed for e-commerce, like a PrestaShop maybe, or like a Shopify, or like a BigCommerce. They see the change. There's less bugs also on these platforms. And when it comes to security, I mean, how many websites on WordPress get hacked, like every year? We just got contacted by a client the other day because their WordPress got hacked because it's a really popular platform. So hackers, they have a good incentive to actually try to find hacks into it. And because all of the plugins, all the theme that they release, they don't really like, nobody really checks the code. Nobody makes sure that they are secure. Nobody makes sure that they are updated. So yes, it's a free platform, but then really maintaining a platform like WooCommerce at scale, it's really, really hard. And so if people want to do WooCommerce, I think it's good. It's not the one that I would advise. I've tried that and like a lot of people, when you move to like a platform that is really into e-commerce, life is so much easier.
Yeah, it's good to know. Thank you for sharing that. So how much how do we use our social proof to promote conversions, with our e-commerce?
Well, if you want to improve your sales on e-commerce using social proof, I think there's two ways that I can tell you how to do it. The first one is reviews, right? Reviews are really, really important on the web page. So you need to have review on a product page. Even if you're selling a virtual product, services, it's really good to have these reviews. People really look for reviews, the 5 stars, the stuff like that, the average. And we know that because it works on Amazon, and Amazon is a good example of how to make people buy and buy and buy again. So make sure that you have some reviews on the website, and make sure that you are getting these reviews, so every time somebody buys one of your products, once they receive it, after 1 week, send them an email like, hey, I hope you get your product okay. How did you like it? If you like it, would you mind giving us a review? And if you don't like it, let us know so we can fix it and make it okay for you, right? So that's just good customer service. That's gonna increase your retention, and that's gonna help you have really good reviews. So that's the first thing, and that's really easy to do, right? On Shopify or whatever, you have a lot of tools to do that. Like the Yopto, the Yoloi, they're really good at it. And then the second one I would say is the UGC content, especially in the fashion and beauty world. You want to see, when people come to your website, they want to see your product in situ. It's not enough to have a picture of a model wearing your products, doing a photo shoot. They want to see how it looks like on a person that looks a little bit more like them. They may not have the same body structure, the main skin type. So it's really good to involve your clientele in inviting them to create UGC, or to reach out to like professional, I would say, UGC creator to create content, and then you put that on your website. That acts as a review because people are giving their review on the product, they're trying it, they're using it, and it also shows that hey, other people seem to like this product, so it's more likely that I'm gonna like this product too, right? There's nothing worse than a product page with no review and no UGC content. It's just gonna be really hard to have like a new customer who doesn't know you, doesn't know your brand, buy into it if you don't have this element.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's a good point too, because quite often you go to an e-commerce site and you find something that you like, and quite often I look at the reviews of that particular item because I want to see, well, what are people liking about it, or what aren't they, or what are they disliking about it, especially if it's going to cost me a little bit of money. So not, if it's less than $100, I probably wouldn't bother, but if it's in the thousands of dollars, I would look at the reviews on that to make sure that my money's well spent. So I guess the final question would be, what common e-commerce pitfalls should new entrepreneurs avoid?
So what pitfall should entrepreneur evolve in the
In the e-commerce world, so what are some of the common e-commerce pitfalls that people should be avoiding?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. What are the mistakes that entrepreneurs do in e-commerce and that they should avoid? I mean, we actually released like an ebook with the 11 fatal mistakes that beauty brands actually do. Maybe we can put a link somewhere, how they can ask me on LinkedIn or on Instagram so I can send it to them. One of the mistakes we see like a lot of people doing is that they assume a lot about what their audience wants, what they're looking for, and what they think, and they don't do enough. How do you say? I don't want to say market research because that's not the right that that's something that I want to use, but they don't talk enough to the audience to understand what they need.
They don't do enough research on their audience.
Exactly. So, for example, every time somebody, if you're launching a new product and you get a few new customers, I think your first reflex should do to go and ask them, hey, what did you buy the product? What did you like about it? And are you happy with it? What problem did it solve? And most of the time, people are going to realize that the reason why people buy the product is not even something that they thought of. It's not even something that they were aware of. Yeah, that's a really great piece of data to and knowledge to have, right? But if you don't have it, if you don't ask that, you're gonna work your business, kind of like on a whim or on just assumption, and it's really bad. You want to have a data-driven approach. You want to validate all of your hypotheses. So don't be afraid to ask your customer, why they bought the product. What they like about it, what problem they were trying to solve with it, and then if you do that enough, you're gonna realize that some trends are appearing in the answer you're getting, and that's gonna allow you to maybe refine your positioning when it comes to the brand, or also refine your marketing message. So you might be selling a feature A as a big feature of the product, but if you ask your customer who bought it, you're gonna realize that maybe the reason why they bought it is because of the feature C. So maybe it would be interesting to change marketing and talk about the feature C a little bit more, in a more important manner, to see how the audience react, because they might be more interested into this solution.
Yeah,
So yeah, I would say yeah.
great tip. Yeah, I think that's probably something that we could all do. Like when we're launching a product, I mean, it doesn't have to be a fashion product, could be any product that we're putting onto the marketplace. We should be asking our audience what did they want?
Exactly.
Yeah, and give them a snippet perhaps of maybe you've got a new ebook and give them a brief overview of what the book's about and say, well, maybe that's not where they want to buy, and maybe that there's something else that could be included or something that should be taken away.
Yeah, exactly. I think like trying to talk to your audience as soon as possible, especially if you're starting a new project or launching something new. It's just going to help you redefine. You don't have to do any guesswork, because I think the guesswork is the hardest part. When you have to put effort into a task without knowing if that's the right task or not. I mean, for me, that's just like an easier way to procrastinate and not even do anything. So, but once I know exactly what my audience is looking for, I have no problem working to produce that, because I know they're going to like it and that's what they want.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Now you can find Gabrielle on LinkedIn at Gabrielle hyphen Kam, which is KAAM, and you can find him on his website at knr.paris. And you have something that you would like to promote today, Gabrielle.
Well, generally, we've been working with a lot of big brands and small and medium brands, and right now we are starting like a coaching program specifically aimed to small brands making between like 100K and 1 million a year, so like in the process of beginning, and people who basically want to understand how to grow a brand, how to scale it, because we've been doing that for over 8 years, especially like in a fashion beauty and luxury industry. So if people are interested into this coaching, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn or on the website, and we'd be happy to help.
Wonderful. Have you got any anything else that you'd like to share with us, Gabriel?
Not really. Have a good day. That's it.
All right.
That was good to be on the show, Rose. Thank you for the invitation.
It's lovely to have you. Lovely to meet you. And thank you for sharing with us. I think anyone that's thinking about starting an e-commerce brand or business will get a lot of benefit out of the things that you've shared today.
I hope.
All right. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talking with the Experts, hosted by Rose Davidson. Make sure you have a look at our back catalogue over at talkingwiththeexperts.com. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any episode. We look forward to your company next time.